Across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
On FM, digital and your mobile.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Christmas edition of Flavour. And thanks to Ian Daybourne for the last 2 hours. I'm Matt Bentman, and jingling away in the background is Alan Alder, and Dr. Sue Bailey is also here with her Christmas hat. And they're going to be telling you what we have lined up for today.
Yeah, Susanna Watson from Hum Closen will be talking with me about getting the most out of cheese. Rosie Sykes with the fourth of her Christmas tips. Today it's gravy. And Flavour reporter Rosie Aplin has been out and about at Calverley's Brewery in Hooper Street.
We also have a visit to Hot Numbers in Gawida Street and a chat with owner Simon Fraser. And we have a visit to Dave Fox from Trumpeton Allotments, who'll be giving some advice on pruning.
And in addition, we have a few Cambridge food producers telling us what they're having for Christmas dinner. And now, here's the first, a very well-known voice on Flavour.
Oh, I'm Dave Fox, and I don't do Christmas dinner at all, I'm afraid. Just don't do Christmas, but I'm sure some homegrown parsnips and Brussels sprouts will find their way onto my plate that day.
You don't do Christmas?
No, of course not. I do my tax return on Christmas Day, because that's when HMRC servers are actually working. They're not clammed up with lots of other people like they are at the end of January.
Right. Each to his own.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, there's a bit of a surprise, but I can promise you it's all going to be uphill from here. Let's move swiftly on to cheese, something most of us enjoy, though my sister is a notable exception.
What? She doesn't like cheese?
No, she really, really dislikes it. But those of us who do, are we getting the most out of eating it? What flavours are we finding in it? Cheesemonger Susanna Watson of Hum Closen brought some of her cheeses into the studio. I got to try them and to find out more about appreciating them. And I've edited this piece so you don't have to listen to me drooling.
So there's a lot of camembert in the market nowadays, and a lot of it is quite industrially produced. This one is made in quite a large dairy, but still independently owned, which is nice. It's a family business. They have maintained some of the more traditional elements of the recipe, that crucially the curds are still ladled by hand. And that is quite an important process in the making of the camembert, and it really contributes to a very nice silky texture in the cheese. So it melts in your mouth very easily. Some camemberts can either be very, very liquid or a little bit rubbery, whereas this is very soft and gentle, and it is because it's been handled in such a careful way. And the flavour, it shouldn't be too strong. I think in the UK we've come used to having really strong camembert, and in France they will usually go for a camembert that's still got a bit of chalkiness in the centre of the cheese, because the acidity in the middle of the cheese actually provides a nice contrast and lifts the flavour a little bit. Whereas I think in the UK we have a taste for a stronger camembert, maybe because a lot of camembert has travelled a greater distance to get here. It might have taken another 2 or 3 weeks to arrive into the UK market. Well, some of us might have brought it back from our holidays ourselves in the boot of the car. And just in that process, on a hot summer's day, the camembert has ripened and become quite strong, and hence our preference for a stronger
cheese.
Because
it's what we've got to know. Yeah. Is camembert a cheese you two like?
Oh, yeah. Adore
yes.
Camembert.
Yeah,
you don't find
like
it too overpowering them?
No.
Happy to be overpowered by camembert.
Yeah.
Susanna brought in a few cheeses to try, but we'll dwell on just one more, the Stilton, a blue Stilton, which was heavenly.
Everybody knows Stilton, and we love it at Christmas time. We were talking about suppliers before, and this recipe is made by Coulson Bassett, but especially for Neil's Yard Dairy, using a more traditional recipe. I love Stilton. I think it's probably my favourite blue cheese. And this is probably my favourite Stilton. So, well, it definitely is my favourite Stilton in the UK marketplace. And it's extraordinary. It's consistently good. But I do think that that's because, first of all, there's a great traditional recipe being used to make it. The cheesemakers are very, very skilled in doing that. But also great care is taken at Neil's Yard to mature this cheese to its optimum.
How do you take great care? You don't just leave it in the room and turn the light out then?
No, so they've developed over the years sort of optimum conditions of moisture and temperature within their Stilton maturing rooms. They will think about cheeses batch by batch, so if a batch maybe has a little bit more moisture, they will position it somewhere where there is more ventilation to try and get the correct texture in the cheese. They will also be tasting through the batches on a weekly basis to release them in the right order. So one batch might actually be, say for example, 4 months old and really ready to eat, and actually there's something next to it that's 2 weeks older that hasn't reached its optimum flavour yet. So they will sell the younger cheese over the previous batch and wait for the other batch to be ready.
What a nice life you must have.
Well, I do eat a lot of cheese, and apparently there's been some good news stories lately that that's actually not as bad for you as it could be.
As was once feared.
But it's taken me to some really fascinating places as well, travelling through Europe to very, very remote areas which I wouldn't normally have visited, in the Alps, and having to do a bit of hiking at, you know, early morning to go and see cheese being made is always a privilege. And so in that respect, it's a lovely lifestyle.
Right, well, thanks very much, Susan.
Thank you very much.
And that was Susanna Watson from Hum Closen. And it does sound a wonderful experience trying cheeses from small producers like that. Have you two a favourite cheese at all?
Blue Stilton for me.
Oh, right. Well, you'd love this Blue Stilton. I should have brought some in. I ate it all, unfortunately.
Oh, naughty. I like a truffle cheese. Truffle brie I've tried recently, and that's lovely. And then there's a Leyden cheese, which has cumin seeds in it. It's a Dutch cheese.
Oh, how interesting.
Very nice.
Right. My favourite cheese is one that I used to eat in a place in Provence called Vaison-la-Romaine. Mm. And it was a local cheese, and it was very small. It was a goat cheese. And you could get it young, or you could get it old, or you could get it very old. The very old was actually only 3 months old. But it became, in that 3 months, so hard that when you cut it, it splintered.
Really?
It was extraordinary. And it tasted so clean and fresh. It was wonderful cheese. But I've never seen it anywhere else. I think it's just a truly local cheese.
Wow. Worth a trek to track it down.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, let's find out what another Cambridge foodie is having at Christmas. Who can this be?
I'm Rosie Sykes, and this Christmas I've promised my friends and family that we can have a venison Wellington on Christmas Day. So a piece of venison wrapped in wild mushroom and mushroom pate and then in pastry. It's a bit unconventional, but I have a feeling it's going to be good.
Well, that's a bit more like it.
Yes, Rosie Sykes there, author of the recently published Sunday Night book, one of the books recommended by the Guardian's Cook supplement a couple of weeks ago. And while we're talking about Rosie, here is her final tip for the Christmas meal.
One thing that people aren't always confident about at Christmas is gravy. And my recommendation would be don't use a powder or a granule. If you haven't got time to make your own stock, you can buy really lovely fresh stocks now. And I would recommend that you acquire some stock, and then I would always cook it down, reduce it. I never put any flour or anything in. I think a gravy should just be a very nice, light sauce, not a very thick thing that sets as soon as it gets a little bit cold. So I would recommend that you simmer some stock with a lot of herbs like thyme, bay, maybe a bit of rosemary, perhaps a bit of garlic. Then when you've cooked your meat of choice, take it out of the pan and just add some either wine or apple juice, any kind of liquid. It doesn't have to be alcohol, but I would personally probably use white wine or cider. And put that tray back into the oven. Put a really decent amount of liquid so you've got a covering over the whole of the oven tray base. Put it back in the oven and let it get hot for a minute, and then get a balloon whisk and whisk the tray, and you'll get all the delicious flavours from cooking the meat from the tray. Pour that through a sieve into your gravy, simmer it for a bit longer, and you will have a really good depth of flavour.
Rosie Sykes' fourth and final tip, well, for this Christmas anyway.
So is gravy something you struggle to get right or you're keen on getting?
I'm keen to get a nice gravy, but I do prefer mine slightly thicker. So I do use something called a beurre manier, equal amounts of flour and butter, whisk in to thicken it, and a bit of alcohol, of course.
I really like a good gravy, but the word gravy makes me tremble. Really? I know it goes back to secondary school when the gravy we had with school dinners was absolutely terrible. And I think, because I do think about it quite a lot, I think it must have been made from, I don't know, boiled onions and flour. And it was just unspeakably horrible. And when the word gravy is said, that's what I think
of. You cringe.
Yeah, it's true.
What a shame.
Yeah, but I mean, I do like nice gravy. Yeah. I just don't like the word.
Rosie Sykes sounds beautiful. Yeah.
I'm Alison McTaggart from Bread on a Bike. What I often like to do is do something like a slow roast leg of lamb, because that means I can go out all day, put the slow roast lamb in the oven for 7 hours, go out for a long walk, and then if I'm having a Christmas meal at home, I tend to have it in the evening. So we'll do it that way. So slow roast leg of lamb surrounded by lots of vegetables with a bottle of wine over it, you know, as the moisture. And that just makes the most delicious Christmas meal.
And watch out for some more exciting breads from Alison next year, by the way.
Now, flavour reporter Rosie Aplin has been out and about this week. She paid a visit to Calverley's Brewery on Hooper Street to hear about a collaborative beer effort between the brewery and Cam City WI.
And that's the sound of cake beer being poured.
Today, Flavour is here at Calverley's Brewery, and I'm joined by...
Tom, one of the Calverley brothers.
Mel from Cam City WI.
Helen, also from Cam City WI.
And Lisa, president of Cam City WI. So Cam City first started dealing with Calverley's a couple of years ago. Mel, who is one of our social team, knows their mum. So that's how the connection started. From there, we got in touch with them to see if we could do a summer social beer tasting. And we also had Holy Schnitzel, the food van. And then this year just gone, we had a slightly bigger event. Basically took over the whole of Calverley's for the afternoon. The guys provided food for us, beers, obviously. we had, what else did we have? A hooker duck, we had a cake competition, there was sweets, all sorts of quiz, an epic quiz. It's just developed from there, really, just hanging out. Mel's here drinking most of the time. So, no, we've gone from there, and then Mel came up with the idea to do the cake beer.
Yeah, so Mel, can you tell us a bit about the inspiration? Because I think you went along to Sheffield.
Well, we've got a lot of friends in WIs in all the places around the country. Sheffield has an amazing WI, one of many, but Seven Hills WI, they're very prolific. They do a lot of things. Mainly, they really get involved with their local community, and they have a local brewery. And they approached them about doing an Earl Grey tea beer. And we'd heard about that. We heard it sold out. And we were like, oh my God, well, we've just made connections with an awesome Cambridge brewery. And what do we love? We love cake. So probably drunkenly, we mentioned the fact that we would really, really love to do a beer. Would they be up for it? Turns out yes, because they had a really amazing range of flavours and they were thinking about new ideas and things. And we just mentioned the word cake beer. And it seemed to fit with their ideas for a beautiful chocolatey porter. And obviously we wanted to put our mark on it. And I'm sure Tom can tell you a lot more about what actually happened to make cake beer come about.
So, yeah, what came about was the idea of combining two of life's finest things, cake and beer, like two necessities, but also things that remind you life is good. So one of our beers, which is actually we brewed because our mum told us to, so it all comes about to was our porter. And porter is naturally a rich chocolatey coffee like beer, and so what we were doing was accentuating some of the flavors that exist within there. We got the cake made with our beer in it, and that cake went into the mash. So when we mash it in and we're getting all of the sugars out of the grain and malted barleys, we also extracted the sugars from the cake. That went into the boil, and we added raspberry jam, we added cocoa, vanilla, and then after the fermentation, we had soaked a couple of kilos of cacao nibs in vodka to kill all the wild yeasts. And so once the yeast had died back, we then introduced that to the fermenter vessel. and then the yeast reawoken and started eating into the cacao nibs. So you, then you got the chocolate aromas as well as the flavours from the cacao that went into the boil. So it's a long made beer, but it's been a pleasure to make something that's been well received and to be part of and to be able to give back and work with lovely people.
Because I think it's really important to note that we've done this collaboration because Cam City supports women everywhere. Mainly, we have been supporting for the last year and last year Cambridge Rape Crisis Centre with fundraising of many different types. And 10% of this sale of the product is going to go to the charity, which is fantastic news. And yeah, it's been so nice to see so many women actually in the tap room enjoying the beers. I mean, everyone likes what they like, but for someone like me, I've been educated quite strongly in the ways of beers and the different flavours, and I don't think any woman can actually say now, oh, I don't like beer, because every single beer tastes different. It's really been a learning curve, and watching the guys over the past few years in the tap room develop more and more beers on this ever-extending menu has been so good. So good for everyone in there, boys and girls all alike. And do you know what, a lot of the men took away leaflets with the cake beer recipe on it.
Yeah, so tell us about the cake beer recipe. How is that connected with the cake beer?
We developed our own version of a chocolatey porter cake, obviously using the Calverley's delicious alt beer, put pretty much a pint of that into the cake. One of our lovely members, Bronwyn, provided her beautiful kitchen. So we made the first cake there, which then obviously went into our cake beer. So that was the first cake we made. And we've made several cakes since then with our cake beer. So since it's been brewed, we've made a couple of cakes and they've both been delicious.
So this has been a loving sort of time watching the boys do their first bottling of a beer. It's been a hand-bottled beer. And many of our members have actually ordered bottles for themselves so they can go away and make cake beers.
Fantastic.
And I've got one at home that will hopefully go into the second batch waiting.
Yes, yeah, so it's been really popular, hasn't it? The first batch you've already sold out, I think, is that right?
It's all gone now. But we like to think it's the beginning, but it's a tongue twister. You know, you've got a beer that went into a cake and the cake went into a beer, and now the beer cake is going to go into a cake that's going to go into a beer.
It's like a circle of cake beer.
It's like a Dr. Zeus circle of life, sourdough, like pass it down. It's a beautiful little tongue twister.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. So if people listening want to get their hands on some cake beer, will they be able to do that? Is there going to be a second batch?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a second batch. We're going to get it in our brew schedule ASAP.
So, Lisa, you mentioned earlier there might be some other cake-related WI events coming up, or possibly you were looking for recipes, was it, from people?
Yes, one of our meetings that we've got coming up, we're looking for non-alcoholic cocktail-inspired recipes that we can use for cupcakes. So if you've got any of those, if you can send them over to us, there's a form on our website, so camcitywi.co.uk. I had to double check then. So yeah, if you've got anything that might work, send it over. Okay. And also come visit.
Okay, fantastic. And presumably you can find out more about the latest news on cake beer there as well, and on the Calverley's website.
Yeah, we post it on what we're releasing and what on our social medias, so watch this space. Yeah.
That's it. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
So, Tom, have you got anything else coming up at Calverley's you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, well, we're always brewing and playing and creating new beers that are available in our tap room every weekend. And every Saturday, we've got our friends from Naples, Neapolitan, that's pizza, cooking up proper pizza done how it should be. If you've not tried it, it's a must. A little treat for Cambridge folks.
That was Mel Reed, Helen Logan and Lisa Hay of Cam City WI, and Tom Calverley. And of course, many thanks to Rosie Aplin for that feature.
Another Christmas meal now. Kim Benn is a vegetarian foodie who was on Flavour a few weeks ago talking about from root to shoot, eating the parts of vegetables often thrown away.
My family and I, we've just recently gone from vegetarian to trying out a vegan diet, which is very interesting. So we're going to try a vegan day, but lots and lots of vegetables. And I've just been growing my sprouts, purple sprouts and green sprouts. So lots of sprouts, which I stir fry with chestnuts. I'm going to look for some sort of nut roast that I can do without the use of eggs, and just lots of roast vegetables. My parsnips are absolutely beautiful this year, so I'm hoping lots of roast parsnips, carrots, potatoes, of course, but no duck fat or anything like that. Just, it'll be oil, mostly olive oil, probably. It should be okay. I'm looking forward to it.
Christmas pudding?
I'm not too much of a key, not keen on Christmas pudding, so it might be just fruit steeped in lots of alcohol. Vegan alcohol.
Now, last month, Hot Numbers featured in a Telegraph article as one of the top 30 best and buzziest coffee shops in the country. Now, I was last there in July when owner Simon Fraser hired Kiwi chef Adam Andrews to come in and blitz the brunch menu, turn it into something completely new and noteworthy. But I haven't really sat down with Simon since the cafe began 6 years ago, and that was back when he and I were new on our respective scenes. It made me think, you know, it made me think of radio. Made me think of flavour. Why am I doing this? What is this for?
Well, we've talked about this a lot outside the programme, and you've said it's about the stories as much as it is the food.
Yeah, and I want it to be more and more about those things. And Simon, I think he's in the same boat.
Just yesterday, I was going down Kingston Street, and I noticed that they've reclaimed the Hot Number signage that was fading away.
That's it.
That's the origin of your shop's name.
It is, yeah. Max Reese's old record store on Kingston Street, and Hot Number's named after the chart toppers that existed. I started Hot Numbers Coffee in 2011, and I remember setting up right here, as we're sitting here.
And you're showing me on your laptop how you designed the interior using a CAD program.
That was the vision of the cafe, a very community-driven space with lots of kitchen tables, broadsheets. At the time, we didn't have so many laptops either, so very different actually back in 2011, but all done with a massive passion for coffee.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, you too. You're...
Now Ed, you see, he's a Welsh boy like me. Originally from Fishguard, he lives on Mill Road now. He likes relevant records for his breakfasts. He was a regular at the Urban Larder.
And the other place I come to, of course, is Hot Numbers. I met Simon. I like his approach with live music and so on.
The one thing I really liked coming back here this time was the visual punch that he's added to the menu. When you see these things being served up, the porridges and the raspberry and coconut vegan panna cotta, they were really something so incredibly stylish in what is otherwise a morning breakfast.
Yes.
I make a porridge at home, it looks like a shambles. I see a porridge at Hot Numbers, I feel underdressed.
So what I like about this new setup is that you've got a good all-day menu, and you can have your eggs on toast right up to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm. That is fairly unusual. Most of the other places finish that sort of fare around about midday.
Yeah.
As Mill Road has changed and as times have changed, we always did food from the beginning. We did paninis and toasties and whatever we could with our limited space. But since knocking through the archway into the other building, I was no longer excited by our food offering anymore.
So he brought in Adam.
No more paninis. Banned paninis, I reckon.
Two Adams, really, involved at the start. So one consultant, Adam Andrews, who came in.
I'm making some tasty, different, interesting brunches that you can't always even get in London. So I'm glad to bring these stuff to Cambridge.
Working with our Adam, who's our head chef, he's created these amazing dishes. Seasonal, fresh, colourful.
Just good takeaway food, you know.
So it's the same idea, but everything's just better.
New kitchen, much more space, just really exciting food coming out, which is a game changer really for us.
Yeah, just play around with a brunch menu. I really like breakfast. I love breakfast.
A lot of vegetarian, vegan food, all sorts on the menu.
Thank you. I'll let you know when the drinks are ready for you.
I'm Andy. I'm the shop manager of the Gwydir Street Hot Numbers. So I've been here altogether about 2.5 years. All the feedback we've had on all the new menu has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's kept the same idea. It's a sort of brunchy kind of idea.
You know what I want to do? I want to paint a picture for the listener, because the dishes that you're serving up right now are so very, very visual. To say, like, in your own words, to describe a couple of these dishes.
Okay.
And really what sells them, because it's not only the content, but it's the presentation that you put into it.
Mm. It is a beautiful one, that one. It's our raspberry and coconut panna cotta. which is completely vegan as well, unlike any other panna cotta on earth, I think. The basis of it is the panna cotta itself.
Yeah.
It's like a nice sort of dark purple, just lightly set jelly. And then with that, there's then a swirl of a gel, which the chefs have made. We call it a gel, which is unusual in food, but it's a sort of gel texture, a bit between jam and a sort of a sauce, which they've made from a raspberry. There's a streak of that going across the plate, and then with that you've got pieces of honeycomb, which are broken up across the various beautiful edible flowers, little bits of nut as well, sort of pistachios with a bit of green in there, matching sort of the purple of the flowers and the panna cotta. It's a nice dish. It's not just sort of banging something out, it's actually putting a lot of care and attention into what you're making.
Yeah.
It's quite a satisfying thing, and then to see that product come out. Banana chai porridge.
Yeah.
Quite new to the menu as well, actually. First bits of feedback we have were, what milk are we using in it to get it so rich?
It's not necessary to have dairy milk with it.
And we're not using any, which is quite exciting.
Even with tea, soy milk.
Oh, do you?
I do, yes, and I like the taste.
Yeah.
The basis of it, or the actual sort of milk part of it, is a banana puree, which I've never seen before, but is absolutely brilliant. So it's got this really sort of nice, rich taste. Doesn't lack anything whatsoever. Especially now in winter, it's just like a proper warmer, really. Got the slight spices in there as well from the sort of chai.
It's really superb. And it's wholesome.
You know, Darren Brown, the illusionist.
Mm-hmm.
Best porridge he's ever had. He was in here recently. Pancakes as well. The buttermilk pancakes. So these are quite interesting. So these have been a really popular one since they were introduced.
There's no maple syrup here.
I mean, the trimmings are even better than the actual pancakes themselves.
We're going to go for something a little bit more interesting, a little bit different.
So with those, you've got pears, which have been poached in red wine and some spices. So these are sort of the topping as well as a mascarpone cream. That comes in with some raspberries, baby basil, and again some nice little edible flowers on top. So it's just like, just light up the dish.
Good. Interesting. Fun. Hmm.
Again, that's another really, really popular one with sort of the Instagram crowd. Beautiful sort of presentation for it, yeah.
Is that something that helped form the menu as well?
I don't know if it's what helped form it exactly, but it...
I don't mean that in a cynical way.
No, I know what you mean. It's been... I mean, obviously, a pretty dish is important, especially now more than ever, I think, now that more and more people are seeing it.
Because it is a fact that the most pictured thing on Instagram or Twitter is usually food, isn't it?
Yeah.
Social media is the key. Instagram's the key. Instagram makes people rich, makes people famous. It does all sorts of things. So it's great for food. It's fantastic.
I completely believe that. Just really drop food off at tables with customers when they've got their phones out before they've taken a bite and they just take a picture of it.
It's
really nice.
And there's kimchi on the menu.
We're covering Japan, China, Korea, Vietnam, Thailand. I'm really into all of those types of food.
The kimchi feta eggs dish. This is one of the headline dishes that we do. The base of it is tomato and gochujang chili sauce. And on top of that, there's two fried eggs floated on it. And then on top of that, you've got nice toasted sesame seeds, nice lumps of feta cheese, bits of spring onion, baby coriander leaves scattered across the top, and then some of the nice sourdough toast as well, which we get from a very local bakery. A slightly Asian twist on things as well. So things, it's like you've got some gochujang, which is a sort of South Korean chili paste, which we make some of our sauces with that goes with some of the meals. So a bit of spice in there, so it's quite interesting.
So I had to reinvent the food to bring it up to scratch with the coffee, and that's exactly what we did.
I can see Adam Andrews' influence in the gochujang chili.
I can
hear it in the words that you're using as well.
Yeah.
He's had an influence.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're showing people the good food you're doing and the ingredients you're doing, and show them the chefs who are making it, and just say, hey, just come on down, come check it out, and people will eventually go, hey, you know what? That looks good, and I want to eat that.
Remarkable for the 2 weeks he was there.
I'm going to be moving over to the Trumpington Street Hot Numbers, switching that place up too.
A very, very strong influence on across everything.
You got to love what you do.
I still have the same enthusiasm, but in a different way. I mean, if anything, I sort of enjoy it even more. So the world of coffee is continually evolving. The roast process, the evaluation of coffee, dealing with characters, staff, everything that happens, it's kind of,
That sounds like the best thing to hear, especially 6 years on.
Yeah, but funnily enough, it's almost like, I've needed to bring back the musical element on the walls missing from Gwydir Street. As we've had sort of other gallery bits and pieces, which have been great, I feel like there's time for a focus on the music. So I'm going to get my record collection together and then start sticking them all over the cafe walls. So I've got quite a big vinyl collection of jazz music.
And he made contacts, Martin Kemp in particular, who's played with big bands in London back in the 60s and 70s.
And a round of applause for my long-suffering band with the rubbishy music I handle from time to time.
Through that connection, really top-class musicians started to play here. Bye. And there's sort of standard of musicians that you pay a lot of money for if you were in Ronnie Scott's or somewhere like that in London.
This is just a reminder that if I hadn't retired as a lawyer, you'd have been paying 150 guineas an hour for us. So take your lucky star. I'll arrive late tonight,
oh, Blackbird. I was listening to the radio this morning and there were two people just talking about how important it is to be able to take 10 minutes out of your day and just think. If you can put that 10 minutes aside just to think about where your life is and what you're doing. And I've got that sensation now as we're kind of sitting here at the back wall of Hot Numbers, just looking out across.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that's happened in the 6 years that like you say, it's very nostalgic looking back over time and all the pictures and how it's evolved over that time.
But first of all, I'd just like to say, getting towards the end of the year, how grateful we are to the people who run this place, who let people come play jazz and also create this unique atmosphere. It is unique. I've played in all sorts of other places and this is the most friendly and relaxed atmosphere I've ever played in. So that's why one of the reasons I keep coming back. And thank you, you audience. Thank you.
So many of the people that we interview on Flavour, you know, they're working day to day. They're just like you, they don't get the chance to look back. And that's something that I really enjoy about making these features, an opportunity for them to see their story from another point of view.
I think what's needed then, Matt, is you come over with a microphone and a set of headphones more often to everyone.
Yeah.
And actually use this as a chance for everyone to actually reflect on what they're doing and actually take 5 minutes, because it's definitely a good thing.
That feels like the purest form of radio to me. That feels like the best way to do it justice.
Well, if you're ever stuck for a feature, you just go round everyone. You turn it into a new career.
All right, thanks very much, Simon.
Cheers, Matt.
You might think, sitting there for 2 hours listening to this stuff, you might feel a bit jaded, but the opposite is true.
Yeah.
Captivating is the word.
Great music. And that feature began life when a waiter walked past you serving a porridge.
Yeah, a porridge so impeccably styled it could have been designed by Laura Ashley. And I sat down with Simon after that, and the rest more or less just flowed.
But what you're hearing here is an edit, one person's edit.
Yeah. You know, say if yourself or Alan or Rosie or Louise was there, we'd all produce something different, something very different. And this, more than any other feature, made me stop and think, take a step back. What is it that I'm doing? You know, often I'm in a rush trying to find and secure and prepare our next interview. Everyone I record, they're busy running a business. I see them on their work hours. They don't have time to stand around being recorded. So it's tricky. You know, things go wrong, equipment fails, people change plans. In the end, everything we do on Flavour is based on our gut feeling. And the key phrase for me, as it has been for a few years now, is...
Is it interesting?
Yeah. I don't know. I hope so. And I felt like Simon was thinking the same thing that day about Hot Numbers. Making little changes here and there, keeping it ticking over. Well, that's one thing. But also keeping in mind what he loves about Hot Numbers. I think he loves what he does. And I know I love what I do, what we do. And God knows I work a damn sight harder on this than my day job. We just have to make it pay now.
Hi, yes, I'm Sue Bailey, Cambridge foodies, local sort of culinary historian and food science person. What I'm going to do is have a goose for Christmas. Very traditional.
Well, we recorded that a few weeks ago. It was admirably succinct, Sue, but would you care to add to it?
Stuffing, sausages, i.e. the pigs in blankets, and hopefully getting my daughters to do an awful lot of the food preparation, which they did a couple of years ago when my husband and I were desperately ill. So all I then had to do was cranberry sauce. Now I've got them on their marks, ready to set off for the Christmas lunch.
Well, that sounds good. I think we should try doing that. And what about you, Matt?
Very traditional, my family. We are straight down the line on turkey. It's only I get to experience anything more exotic than that if I'm out with friends.
I'm Louise Palmer-Masterton. I'm the founder of Stem & Glory. Christmas lunch has been vegetarian in our house for a very, very long time. We're all big fans of roast potatoes and all the trimmings, obviously without the meat. This year will probably be one of our favourites, actually, which is a chestnut and cranberry Wellington, something along those lines.
Well, now we're ready for the mood for something special. Here's Rosie Sykes again with her advice on stuffing and cranberry sauce.
When I make my cranberry sauce, which I think is really, really nice with a goose or a duck or a turkey, because it adds a nice bit of acidity and another sort of dimension, especially with all the other kind of fatty things, I tend to make it a bit like apple sauce and then put cranberries in towards the end. So make it with some sage. So basically stew some lovely cooking apples with some sage, a tiny bit of sugar, but I tend to use apple juice, some butter, so you get this lovely smoothness. Then throw in the cranberries at the end and you'll have a really nice light sauce that just goes really well with the meat of choice and with the ham, actually, if you have ham.
Right. And the apple is a cooking apple or an eating apple?
Yes, a cooking apple, right. A Bramley, for sure. The other thing that I tend to do for Christmas is a really nice stuffing made with chestnuts and some dried fruit. I do it a bit sort of Middle Eastern, so with breadcrumbs, but with figs, red onions, a load of lemon zest, and some chopped up chestnuts and breadcrumbs. And again, I think all those nice sort of soft Christmassy spices work really well, and a bit of garlic, and add a different dimension.
Rosie Sykes there. Easy to see why her food's so tasty, isn't it?
Yeah, and Rosie will be doing around 5 pop-ups next year in Cambridge, so keep listening to Flavour and we'll be bringing you the details.
Now, another chef who's doing pop-ups is Jamie Burton of Squire's Kitchen.
Hi, this is Jamie from Squire's Kitchen. For this Christmas, I'll be going to Yorkshire. I'll be joining my family and, like everyone else, I'll be having turkey. But me and my brother have bought a cheeky little bit of beef, and we're going to be sharing that together because we're not big fans of turkey. And obviously, I have the privilege of having my nan's lovely Christmas pudding, which is the best thing in the world as far as I'm concerned. That's what Christmas is all about.
Jamie Burton there. His next pop-up is at Fitzbillies on the 26th of January. You can hear Jamie talking about the menu on our last edition, which is now podcast on the Cambridge 105 Radio website. For bookings, contact him via Twitter or Instagram at SquireChef85.
We heard earlier from Dave Fox from Trumpington Allotments. Think of him on Christmas Day, when he'll probably take a break from doing his tax return for a bit of allotmenteering. The weather looks as it might be okay for that. Here he is talking with Alan about how the overwintering crops are doing. And then there's the pruning that's needing to be done.
Now here's a bit of overwintering spinach, which I put in really far too late, so the plants are quite small, but they're healthy.
Yes.
They're glowing in the morning sunlight, so I'm still hopeful of a late crop for these. Although
there's one or two spaces, are they just...
So here's a plant with only one leaf. Something's had a couple of leaves off that, so whatever it wasn't that hungry because it's not taken the rest of the plants.
Right, and here's the peas.
Yes, so here's a fleece, which is partly blown off at the far end, so we can have a look down there. Well, I sowed these in September. They're a hardy variety of pea that ought to crop early in the summer, even late spring. So we've got some well-established pea plants, maybe 10 centimetres in length. They're looking a bit bedraggled. I didn't get great germination, so I re-sowed in the gaps, and there's a young plant just a couple of centimetres high coming up in the gap between two of the mature ones, so that's great. And I'm not seeing any evidence of anyone getting in there and nibbling them. Mice would be the likely culprits. Cover them up again. Of course, the fleece does cut out some of the sunlight.
And you're going to leave it on, what, permanently over winter, or are you
going to... Well, if the Met Office says there's going to be a really nice mild stretch, then yeah, the fleece will come off. Ah, here's the parsnips. So I've had quite a lot of parsnips already, actually, and they've been very good. So my top tip for those who do have Christmas dinner is to get your parsnips out the ground well in advance, because if there's a hard frost on Christmas Eve, you're going to be left looking rather sheepish if you were expected to provide the parsnips for the roast on Christmas Day.
And these are the Celeria.
Celeria, yeah, still looking.
That one's looking a reasonably good size, isn't
it? Yeah, it's not bad. It's, let's see, it's cricket ball size, maybe a touch bigger. Yes, so I'm happy with that. They'll need to come out quite soon because the hungry pests, even if the weather warms up a little bit, the slugs will become active again.
So the message is really either take things out of the ground.
Get the harvest in. I mean, certainly I wouldn't have left potatoes in this late. So if you have got potatoes in the ground, I do suggest get them out while you can.
And except for very hardy things, cover up as well.
Yeah. So there's one crop which we can leave out here for a while. That's a January King type cabbage, I think. You can tell that by the slight reddening in the veins of the leaves. The red colour sort of increases as the cold weather starts.
And what are these? These are very attractive.
Oh, that's a Chinese cabbage. But I've had several really nice heads off that. They're tall and quite tight, and it almost looks like a tight cos lettuce. And I think you could eat it raw, but I prefer to just lightly chop them fine and lightly fry them. They're really, really nice, and as you say, a really nice light green colour.
What are the essentials for work in December, Dave?
Well, pruning of fruit. We want to get that done because we do that when the weather's cold and the sap is down, so the wounds won't bleed and lose the juice from the plant.
Right, we're now down at the fruit end.
Yeah, so here's a blackcurrant bush, and it's got about six established branches that are maybe 2-3 centimeters wide at the base. And the way that one prunes blackcurrants, because of the fact that they fruit on 2 and 3 year old wood, we're looking to create a supply of fresh wood to replace the wood that's 4 years old or even older, because that's got less fruiting potential. And you can see that as well as the six large branches, there's another 10 much lighter coloured, shorter but very vigorous young growth coming up, so they're going to form some of the replacement main branches. Right. And you can only stimulate that growth by cutting out some of the old stuff.
And for blackcurrants, do you want a goblet shape? Do you want it open in the middle,
yeah,
or isn't that
open,
essential?
Yeah. It's better. Of course, the other thing we do though before actually deciding which of the main branches to take out is look for any damaged branches or any diseased
and
branches.
Get so priority
you, yeah,
for coming out.
Yeah, get rid of those first. And if having done that you've taken out a quarter, then your job's done. The thing I do see on here from time to time is coral spot, which is actually a beautiful disease. It's sort of bright pink round dots speckled over a piece of dark old wood, and it's a fungal disease that affects dead and dying wood. So there's several candidates for taking out here. This is the one I'm going to try and do today, just removing some leaves from around the base so I can get at it with the cutters. And I'm going to try to avoid damaging too many of the fresh young growth. Right, so I'm going to sacrifice one of those young shoots because I can't really cut the old one away without damaging it. I didn't damage the one I thought I was taking out, and I did damage the other, but never mind. It'll all be forgotten next summer when we have a luscious crop of tangy, delicious black juicy fruit. So here we're looking at a pear tree which has got quite a nice goblet shape with almost horizontal branches that is the optimal orientation for producing lots of fruit. However, what can we see here? It's quite a long vertical new growth. It's lighter in colour, sort of light brown rather than a sort of darker greyish colour, which is on the older branches, and that's called a water shoot. The reason that the plant is producing vertical shoots is because it's reaching for the sun,
yes,
and wanting to achieve its strategy of growing lots and lots of small pears, contradicting our strategy of wanting to grow a smaller number of large pears. So these water shoots, they're all coming out. So right at the base of that growth, in fact, slightly lower there, and that's leaving a little spur, which hopefully will produce fruit.
right. in the coming season. The spur is a growth off a main branch. So right. here's one yeah. for example. This spur is a little close to this one. That's too close, really. So fruit coming off these spurs is going to be too close together. So I'm going to take out the middle one there
right.
with a clean diagonal cut. These little bits, collect them all up, use them for something. You can just chop them up, leave them around the base of the tree. As long as it's undiseased, all this material can be reused. Because obviously it's whatever chemicals make up these prunings is the chemicals that apple trees are built off. So as they rot down, they'll feed the tree over many years, but they will. And when we've finished taking out the water shoots, then I'll look for dead or damaged, diseased material, take that out, and then after that we'll be on to maintenance pruning, and there won't be too much to do. What I'll be doing is thinning out the fruiting spurs here so that I have again a smaller number of larger fruit without dangling fruit touching, for example.
And the same for apples?
Yep, same thing. Let's have a look at it. So that's a good one. So firstly we eliminate diseased and dead, damaged pieces, and then we look for crossing branches. Having eliminated all those, we then check for water shoots. And it's interesting on this apple, there don't seem to be any, but we have got a lot of new shoots that are going against our preferred open goblet shape. So here's a branch with four new shoots coming out of it. I'm going to take two of those away, one that's pointing back in towards the trunk, which certainly don't want that one.
So you're taking that off right at the yep. base, so there's no
yeah,
no
that.
Bud left.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to leave all three of those, I think, but what I am going to do is shorten them by half or so to an outward facing bud there. And there. So we're making a diagonal cut just above an outward facing bud. So the idea is then that bud turns into the new shoot, which grows outwards, the direction we're always trying to coerce or encourage the plant into.
So it's quite a big job. I mean, it's not a huge apple tree, but it's going to take a fair bit of time to do it all, isn't it? So you need to set aside a decent amount of time for it.
You do, but again, my top tip for this would be don't do it all in one day. You know, do 10% of the pruning, then come back and look at it again a couple of weeks later, because then you'll see different things then. So as long as you've got the right strategy in mind, then that's going to be okay.
And is there a time by which you really should have finished the pruning, or isn't it critical?
End of February.
Because then the sap starts rising again.
Depending on the temperature, yes, but also yeah. because from a practical point of view, you've got more to do at that time. You're starting to raise your seedlings for other crops. So if you leave your pruning until, if you have, you know, in general, the winter's a time to take a rest and to think about the garden, or even possibly think about other things. But if you leave everything until the last week of February, then you'll suddenly find yourself extremely busy and possibly getting behind with the,
yes,
with the summer crops.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, thanks very much, Dave.
Thank you.
And that was the unmistakable voice of Dave Fox, who will be back in Flavour in January.
Time now for some more Christmas dinners. Firstly, from some locals.
Christmas Eve, we as the Danish people, we celebrate with duck and rice pudding. And the whole exciting thing about rice pudding is that we put an almond in there, and the one that wins the almond wins a marzipan pick. And this is a fight that's gone on for years. We all fight and we all hide the almond in our mouth until everything is gone, and then you let go and if you got it or not. So it's a competition for adults and children.
We'll be having the traditional turkey on the day, with roast potatoes, mashed potatoes and several different veg.
Christmas Day we then have the big cold table, but it's actually not cold. We've got warm pâtés, we've got about four different types of herrings, curry herrings, herring in Madeira sauce, rye bread, just made, you make your own rye bread, and of course snaps. You can't have a Christmas lunch, so you have to have snaps with herrings and with the cheese and with a pâté, and that's probably enough anyway. It's very good. It's proper snaps. Alcohol, it's very strong. It's 45 proof. You have three snaps and you feel good. But it's something that even old people are given when they have got a slight problem with their blood circulation. So my grandma, she had snaps every morning just to get her going.
and she lived till she was 95, so I can only recommend it.
Lobster cake!
So this is an unusual Christmas dinner that you have then?
Yes, every year I have lobsters and crab every year and king prawns. We like seafood. My wife is Thai, so we like to have seafood for our Christmas dinner rather than your traditional turkey or beef or lamb or anything like that that people have. We go to my brother's and we have a big celebration there, and his family is from Italy, his wife's Italian. Rather than having Christmas pudding, we have Italian log cake, you know, that's for our dessert, and profiteroles. That's what we have.
And what a few local independents will be having for their Christmas dinners.
I'm hoping that my Christmas dinner is going to consist of turkey and all the trimmings.
Hello, as a Venezuelan, I will have for Christmas dinner ajacas, pork, a kind of salad that is made with potatoes and carrots, and I will have a special bread that is made with ham inside, cheese, and we put olive. Yes, it's super tasty and it's from Venezuela.
He's the cook, actually. So it's a traditional Christmas dinner with all the trimmings, but no Brussels sprouts.
No Brussels sprouts?
No.
Never been a fan?
No. Not even when my mum tried to break them up and pretend that they were cabbage.
I think we have Yorkshire puddings with our Christmas dinner, even if it's turkey, yeah.
Funny enough, being Italian, I love my turkey. I love my turkey with gravy sauce, yeah, with lots of broccoli and potatoes. That is my typical traditional Christmas dinner, even though I'm Italian, but I love turkey, you know.
You do a nice stuffing, don't you?
Yeah, I do sausage meat stuffing.
With morello cherries and
apricots. And cranberries.
Okay, that's
really
nice.
Yeah, it's nice, very nice.
Of course, Yorkshire puds, yeah, every time. All the things I like.
Ready, steady?
Yeah. Hello, my name is Nadia. I run a Brazilian store. Yeah, what I have for Christmas is exactly what we have in England. Turkey and the fish the next day. It's really nice.
Fish the next day?
Yeah, we do. We do have fish, yeah. Called salt cod, bacalhau. Yeah.
Guaranteed we'll have goose. But the thing we've got to have, of course, throughout Christmas Day is champagne. From Cambridge Wine Merchants, we've got a really excellent Premier Cru champagne. It's a grower champagne, it's our own one. We're the only ones that bring it in England. It's called Champagne Pierre Bertrand Premier Cru, and it's absolutely delicious. $26.99, can't really go wrong.
Full salesman mode, I like it.
Yep, that's what I'm here for.
That was the voices of Emerald Foods at Repas Station, Cafe Mobile, Roberto's Deli, Needy's Deli, and, of course, Alice Archer from the Cambridge Wine Merchants. On now to our news section. Let's begin with the usual jobs. Sue?
Yes, and there are several jobs going at Fitzbillies. They are looking for full-time waiting staff, a full-time kitchen porter, part-time weekend baristas and cake shop staff, and a full-time chef de partie. Inquire with your CV by email to manager@fitzbillies.com or phone Cambridge 352 500.
Holy schnitzels are at the Thirsty Winter Garden today from 2:30 until 5, and then again from 6 until 9:30.
Tonight at Thirsty in Chesterton Road, it's the Ministry of Meat. No food truck there tomorrow as they are closing at 6 p.m.
Today there's a craft food vintage and farmers market in Ely till 3:30, and the Sunday market will be there as usual tomorrow from 10 till 4. The Cambridge Sunday market will also be on tomorrow from 8. Almost all the food stalls will be there, including Simon Steele's vegetables, Hawthorne Farms chicken and pork, most of them.
And the Three Horseshoes in Madingley is taking bookings for Boxing Day and New Year's Day lunches. They're open throughout the festive period.
Some news from Pint Shop in Pease Hill. They are having a January sale, an amazing £10 off every £30 you spend. pick up a sale card on your next visit.
Gin fans will be pleased to know that the Chase Distillery will be holding a gin tasting at Pine Shop in Pease Hill on the 23rd of January from 6:30 till 8 p.m. It'll be in one of their upstairs rooms. The cost, which includes five gins and one vodka, is an eccentric £21.67, and tickets are from Eventbrite.
And a second gin tasting at Pint Shop is on the 6th of February with the Southwestern Distillery, creators of Tarquin's Gin. Same times, 6:30 to 8 p.m, same price, £21.67, and also available from the Eventbrite website.
And finally, Food Park has now closed for this year and will reopen on 17th of January.
And that's all the time we have for today, and if you miss bits or if you'd just like to hear the whole thing all over again, there's a repeat at 7 a.m. tomorrow and the podcast, of course, early next week.
Coming up on Cambridge 105 Radio today at 1 p.m, Tony Barnfield meets Barry Cryer, yes, the Barry Cryer, from 2 till 3, 21st Century Women, 3 till 5, Saturday Sport, 6 to 7, The Saturday Soul Show. From 7 till 8, Mandy Morton presents Sgt. Pepper's 50th anniversary with Hunter Davis, Hank Marvin and Andy Summer. From 8 till 10, there's Rock of Ages. Some good shows on tomorrow and Christmas Day too. Tomorrow includes from 6 till 7, Fanny's Cambridge Christmas with our very own Sue Bailey. So what does that include, Sue?
Well, includes all sorts of fannying around things. Basically, Fanny loved her Christmas list. She started Christmas in January as soon as the Christmas had finished. And she also had all sorts of suggestions of things to do with mincemeat, including a mincemeat omelette. And this is a sweet mincemeat omelette.
Oh, really? Mm. Nice.
And making giant sausage rolls and how you stuff your turkey and, yes, using a piping bag. All sorts of exciting and exotic things
right, to do. Also tomorrow night, from 8 until 9, a celebration of 50 years of Fairport Convention, and from 10 to 11:20, a rerun of Remembering Sid Barrett. On Christmas Day, don't miss Paul Cristoforou's look back at 1967 in Cambridge. I've heard a bit of it and it's good. That's on from 6 until 7. But that's all from us. We'll be back on the 6th of January 2018, but until then, goodbye.
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 And happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.